Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to continue our conversation between my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and our physician in residence and co-host, Dr. Meg Meeker, on her new book, Strong Mothers, Strong Sons.
Dr. Meeker, at the end of the broadcast last time, we were talking about how important it is for a mother to protect the image of the father, even if she's not married to him,
yes,
even if they're divorced, mm-hmm, in the eyes of the kids, because they only have one dad.
They only have one
and
dad.
And they need him, and they need to be able to respect, mm-hmm, him and to follow his leadership. And it is so easy for an angry mom, especially if she's been through marital conflict, yeah, to tear into, mm-hmm, that man, and she must not do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as we were talking about last time, the first reason it's very important for moms not to be critical, even in a humorous way, about dad to the son is because it really fractures the relationship the son has with the dad that he needs to have. And secondly, it really sours boys for fatherhood. Remember, every young boy is going to grow up to probably be a dad. And if all he knows and hears is that, gee whiz, you know, being a dad is a bad thing, a bad thing, a bad thing. Whenever I tell mothers, and I do this, you know, very frankly, that it's very important for them not to criticize their husbands, particularly in front of the kids. And they'll say, but you don't understand. My husband is a horrible,
right,
man. He is an alcoholic. He's drunk all the time. He's done horrible things. And every man has a lot of problems and a lot of faults, and some are worse than others. But here's one thing we can always do, because kids need it, sons need it. We can pick out whatever is good in that man, and we can talk about that and praise that in front of our sons and not talk about the bad in a dad.
We talked about this last time too, but there's another reason for the mothers needing to elevate their husbands or the men in their lives, whoever is the father of those children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hate to even say it like that,
yeah,
but it's the kind of world that
is.
We live in.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, Bringing Up Boys, I have a chapter called Men Are Fools. And this next chapter is Boys Are Fools Too.
Mm.
And I don't mean that they really are.
Of
it
course.
Means that's the way the culture treats men.
Exactly.
The feminist movement has ripped into masculinity.
And I think that, you know, women do this because we tend to be very self-serving. And as mothers, as much as we've played up the strength of women over the past 25 years, what we have come to feel is that we are the domineering force in the family. We can run the whole show.
By the way, there's nothing wrong with female accomplishment,
exactly,
or strong women in any way. I just don't know why it seems every time you promote strong women, it also has to include tearing men down.
Exactly.
It can't just be, what a great woman. Look at all the things she's done.
I like it that your first book was Strong Fathers,
Strong Daughters.
Strong Daughters.
Exactly. And I get a tremendous amount of pushback often when I publicly compliment men and I speak up to men and I talk about fathers. I get negative letters, emails, from a lot of women saying, how dare you cut women down? Well, that's not what I'm doing. I'm elevating men. And you can do that and elevate women at the same time.
Why do women not realize that you tear him down
and you hurt
your own cause?
Yeah.
Well, because I think we're that short-sighted and we're that self-centered. And we just are. You know, and I went to an all-women's college in the 70s, and so I claim responsibility.
Where'd you go?
I went to Mount Holyoke College.
Mm.
And I remember my colleagues or my fellow students saying, hey, whatever men have, we want it, and we're going to go and do better than they are. And they just charged. And, you know, there's been a war fought, and there are always casualties in the war, and the casualties, sadly, are fathers and our children. And what we need to always remember as mothers is, A, we don't need to be controlling of the family. We're not the beginning and the end of our families. We want to be. We want to micromanage. We believe somehow that, you know, overparenting, hyperparenting is being a good mom. Pushing dad out of the way is a good thing because we understand he doesn't, which is a mentality. But that when we do that, we are absolutely destroying our children. And we never think about that. It's so painful for children to grow up seeing a mom criticize the dad over and over and over. Because remember, these are kids that want to have confidence in dad. They want to listen to what he has to say. And so if a dad looks at him and says, good job on that paper, you did really well, I'm so proud of you for making the football team. If a child looks to that dad as though he's a fool, why would the child believe that? It wouldn't help his self-esteem at all because dad's just a fool.
You know, there are two sides to this conversation, and the other is that men should not rip into the personhood of their wives.
Exactly.
It
goes both ways.
It really does.
It does, but culturally right now, it is in vogue and it's popular to make fun of men. And it has been for quite some time. You look at sitcoms and it's bumbling idiot parents,
exactly.
Bumbling idiot dads, buffoons. You look at commercials. I said this, you know, for a while, there was a Home Depot commercial and the salesman was showing a woman all these products and they had lasers. And I was like, it's got a laser. I want to buy it. I mean, that was my mentality. And he's showing her how to hang, you know, pictures and do all these things. And it was a tool that helped you do something on your own. And the end of it, she goes, so you mean I don't need him? And it pans over to the boyfriend husband who's got a plunger on his face and he's, you know, going chunk, 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 chunk.
Exactly.
And
stupid.
I just thought, totally unnecessary. The product sells itself. It's a good product. It helps you do it.
I don't understand. Why did the men take it?
I don't know.
Why do they go buy that, whatever it was?
Right. Why do they go?
Why does it work?
Frequent Home Depot.
It must
when they,
work.
And it, well, not only does it work, they air those ads during predominantly male-watched events.
Because
sporting events, NASCAR, football, all these, and they play commercials making fun of men. And it's like—
Because they do it trying to be humorous, and men may chuckle. But imagine if we ran an ad like that with a plunger on a woman's face.
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding?
Uh-uh. That, you know, and
imagine
and,
if you did it with race.
Yeah. Oh, with race. And I want to be very clear about something. I am in no way advocating that men, you know, harm women or that women should you know, take a lot of nonsense from fathers.
Of course not.
But what I'm saying is you're absolutely right, Ryan. It's in vogue now to dumb down men, and it's just having a devastating effect, not only on our kids, but on our families, which has a huge impact on our country. So this is a big deal. And I also talk about in the book how what a mother can do to raise a masculine son and a strong son. And in as much as we've gotten into the habit of criticizing dads, often we turn that to our sons and we start making a joke out of them as well. And this is just horrible for boys.
Well, it's tough too because divorce is so prevalent across the board. I mean, really, it's about 52% whether you go to church or you don't go to church. And so you've got a lot, and most of the time it's single moms raising their kids. So you've got more sons in moms' homes. How do you teach them to raise masculine sons without a man in the family? Can it be done?
It can be done. It's a whole lot harder. But since boys are very visual people, boys need to see a man. They need to see how he talks to their mother. They need to see how he conducts himself, how he works, how he talks to them. And so if dad is not available, I tell single moms, please find a good man in your life. There's got to be one or two, grandfather, uncle, coach, teacher, somebody, and bring that man alive in your son's life. Ask him to spend a little bit of time, show that man off, if you will, and talk about the character of that man. And at least a man, the boy can have an image in his mind of what a good man looks like. I'll never forget, I interviewed a number of professional athletes for the book, and they told me remarkable stories because many of them grew up with single mothers. And one man said to me, I said, how are you so successful? And he had a very strong faith, a very articulate man. And he said, well, a couple of reasons. First, it was my mother. And then second, I had a friend who, and they lived in a very poor area of town. He said, I had a friend whose parents actually ate dinner together at night, and I would sit down, and only a handful of times I went and ate dinner with them. I'd never sat at a table before and had dinner with a family until this family. And I cemented the image of the dad and the mom eating dinner together in my mind. And I said, that's what I'm going to have one day. So just that little image that of, you know, 5 or 10 meals with that man made a big impression on how that man is now parenting his children. And he said, now I insist that when I'm home and I'm not traveling, we eat meals together.
Let's turn a corner if we can, because there's a related issue that I would like to get your perspectives on. In my book, Bringing Up Boys, I talked about the fact that boys, little baby boys, infants, are not born knowing what it means to be male.
Yes.
That's not automatic. They have to learn that. And they began life totally bonded to their mothers. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is everything.
Yes.
They talk about early attachment. It's not early attachment to dads. It's early attachment to the
mothers.
Mom. And that's why they say that when men die on a battlefield and they're dying, the last words that are spoken are often mom. Because she makes such an impact on them. But girls have one developmental crisis in their lives. It's puberty. Mm-hmm. And that is a crisis if you've ever lived through it with all the bombardment of estrogen of the brain and so on. Boys have two. Girls have one. Boys have two. Mm-hmm. The adolescent changes are the second one. But the first is detaching from the mother.
Yes.
And attaching to the dad, because that detachment and attachment is what teaches a boy what it means to be male.
Exactly.
Oh, so this is what guys think. This is how men act.
Yes.
And what you want that little boy to do is to identify with his masculinity.
Exactly.
And in order to do that, the mother has got to let go, because if she doesn't let go, he's not sure where he fits.
Exactly. And I talk a lot about that in the book, and I talk about three pivotal points. They're not crises, but three pivotal points in a boy's life where mom needs to really, and I say not let go, I say peel herself off.
Yeah.
Because enthusiastic, intense, conscientious, loving mothers move in on our sons, and we talk, and we're, you know, very communicative. But it's very important that when a child is detaching from his mother, and remember Bruno Bettelheim said he kills his mother off. I don't know if that's adolescence or that first separation. Mm. But it's very, very painful for the mother, and mothers think, well, why is my son acting this way? Why doesn't he like me anymore? So they chase after their sons. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? It's really not about the mother, it's really about what the son needs to do.
It's really healthy.
It's very
healthy.
But
it doesn't feel like it for a mother.
It feels horrible for a mother, but we need to go through that with our sons.
You have a 22-year-old son. You've been through this.
Yes.
Was it hard for
you? I felt like my heart was wrenching out. It was almost as hard as when our first went to college. Because it is, because a mother has this real protectiveness over her son and this love. And what I say in the book is, when a son is born, a mother looks down at him, and subconsciously you know he's going to leave you one day. And there's a sadness almost that goes along with it. Your daughter doesn't need to leave, but you know if you're a good mom, that boy will leave you, and it should be that way.
You have heard the little phrase, a boy is a son until he takes a wife. A girl is a daughter for the rest of her life.
Right.
And a mother can feel that coming.
Oh, I feel it right
when
now.
When he marries, she's in second place from there on the rest of her life.
Exactly. And his whole life for us is preparing for that time. Now, my son is not married, but each time he separated and pulled away, it was very, very hard, but I recognized what needed to happen. And fortunately, my son has a really great dad, and he could turn to his dad and emulate his dad and imitate his dad and figure out what real masculinity was all about. But it's really hard for a mother, because it pushes all of our buttons. We feel, are we not enough? Are we not capable? Can we not give you? And the answer is no. We're not. But we're not supposed to be. We can be a really, really great mom, and we can do a really great job, but we can never be dad. And I think that lets a lot of single moms off the hook, because they're trying to be everything to their sons. When they recognize they can't, they're limited, So they either find good men or they talk about God the Father,
yep.
who can fill in every necessary hole in a boy's heart.
Now, Ryan, it happened with you, and I've told this story. You were in the process of detaching from your mom and attaching to me. And I think you were about 5 years old, and we would go out to get into the car to go eat. And Ryan would frequently say, Mom and Danae, the girls are going to sit in the back seat, and I'm going to sit in the front seat with us guys. So, now,
by the way, you can tell how old I am because there were no car seats nor airbags that you turn off to sit in the front seat.
Right.
We could still sit in the front seat, probably with no seat belt, but still sit in the front seat.
Yeah, but the point was he was identifying with my masculinity. It wasn't even anything negative to Shirley, and I don't think to Danae. It was that he's saying they're them and they're us, and I'm one of us.
A boy wants to be his dad's son.
Yeah.
A boy wants to be his dad's son. And that's, I have recognized that that's very important to our son.
Yeah.
He's our only son, but he wants to know that his dad thinks he's terrific and that my husband takes great pride in him being his son.
Mm-hmm.
Our daughters don't feel that way. That's something I cannot give my son. He knows that I love him. He knows I approve of him. But that doesn't intimidate me, and it doesn't make me feel less than a good mother. It's just the way it is.
My dad did it through hunting and fishing, and Ryan, I did that with you as well.
Yeah.
And when my dad and I were hunting, I didn't want my mom around.
Mm.
You know, that was a guy thing.
It's a guy thing.
Even as an elementary school children, when I couldn't carry a gun, but I was along, and I absolutely loved those times.
Right. And it's not that you disliked your mom and you didn't want to do things with both parents, but this was yours. We used to have that. There was a trip my dad and I used to go on. It was a bunch of hunters, and it was all fathers and sons.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed, and they invited their wives. I think we went one more time, and we stopped going.
Yeah.
And it's not that I don't love my mom. It's not that I don't want to go and hang out in a cabin with my mom and my dad, but that was a guy trip.
Exactly.
It was supposed to be a guy trip, and it changed. It immediately changed.
Exactly.
And the little
boy. I'm
going to
be called a chauvinist for that
one. The little boy whose mother came along that time cried.
Yeah.
He
really?
Cried. Yeah. Because he had lost something here. Mm-hmm. It's the exclusivity of time with dad.
Exactly. And I think that mothers, as our sons get older, we feel that good parenting means invading that space. You know, constantly calling our sons, constantly, creating a need in them for us, which is very, very unhealthy. And I remember specifically my son telling me, Mom, you're allowed to call this much when I'm in college. And I said, great, okay. You know, and I will honor that, because he was saying, look, Mom, don't treat me like I can't stand on my own two feet. Because mothers often want to be needed, and we want to be needed, and we don't recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
We think that we're being very good mothers by overstepping those bounds. And it's very important to pull
it
back.
What does she do to replace that? I mean, she cannot continue to mother a boy into adulthood.
No.
Listen, the helicopter parent syndrome. I was at Summit. You know, I speak at Summit. It's a ministry here in Colorado Springs. Changed my life at 17. And I know tons of the staff. And last year, I was asking a friend that works. I go, hey, you got any crazy kids? And she goes, no, but we got a lot of crazy parents. And I go, what?
Yeah.
And she goes, yeah, we don't really have bad kids anymore, but we have parents that won't stop calling.
Mm-hmm.
They call all the time. They text their kids all the time. If their child feels the slightest bit homesick, they're calling us to make sure that we go.
You just made somebody mad. I don't know who it is, but there's a parent out there.
There is, but they're pushing their kids away, and they're helicopter hovering over those kids, and they're not letting them grow up.
Well, and we want to soften. We want to pad our son's life. Mothers want to pad their lives. They want to make everything okay. We want, you know, if a football coach kicks them off the team because they drank, Mom wants to run and say, no, let's rework this. And I've literally seen this happen on more than one occasion. The kid gets back on the team because Mom doesn't want her son to feel ostracized and so forth. But I think that, Dr. Dobson, you had asked, what do those mothers do with that?
Yeah,
and I will say to all those mothers, that's when the good stuff really begins. That's when freedom begins. Mothers are afraid of pulling back from their sons because they feel they'll be lost, they'll be empty. But in fact, it won't be like that at all. The son will separate, he will develop on his own, he will become a great man, and after a period of time, you will get back a very, very good relationship with your son that is far more mature, it's adult-like, you won't have to parent them. You cannot have that if you don't let go.
And you don't want what you will do to your son if you don't let that process play out.
Yeah.
You're going to have a mama's boy into adulthood, and that wasn't the way it was designed.
And you will have a very angry daughter-in-law.
Oh, yes, you sure will.
You know what my mom did for me? She made me well-rounded.
Mm.
She really did. I mean, I can list. My mom taught me to cook. She taught me to love cooking, and I do it today. I'm 44 years old, and I bake, and I cook, and I grow the food that I want to eat. And she taught me to love reading. She would read to me all the time. We have a little tiny bench right outside our front door when we grew up. It was built into the wall, and we'd wait for carpool, and she would read to me. She would read Shel Silverstein poetry.
Mm.
I love poetry. I didn't know other kids didn't experience this. I can quote poetry. I love to read. I can cook. I can iron shirts. I can do my laundry. She taught me life skills that when I got to college, guys didn't know how to do laundry.
Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't cook a meal. You know, they didn't know those things. And you know what she taught me? That both my parents did. My dad did it through other means, but she taught me how to treat women.
Mm.
She taught me what made her feel special and how that relates to other girls, the girls that I would date, to open doors, to pay for things, to pull the chair out, to carry
heavy
things.
Mm-hmm.
The chivalry side of things, she showed that to me. And at my age today, I'm trying to pass it on to my son that you respect your mom. You say, yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, and thank you for cooking. All the things that my mom taught me, I'm now trying to teach my son to do to my wife, Laura.
She is a great mom to
you. She is a great mom.
You know, we were talking about reading books, and she would take you to the library. Oh. She had to limit the number of books. It was 10. You could only bring home 10.
And I could only read one a day.
Wow.
That was the rule. She convinced me that the library was Disneyland. I have no idea how she did this, but I could not wait to go to the library. Mm-hmm. And now,
and you're a great reader today.
I've got my Kindle. I've got, I don't know, 500 books on my Kindle. I read all the time. I read 3 or 4 books at once because I'm used to you can only read one a day. And that taught me to reread books, which also really helped my vocabulary and to get different themes and things out of books.
Where that came from is I remember you bringing home 10 books, and they were all read by the next day. And Shirley couldn't run back to the library. And furthermore, she wanted you to be well-rounded. She wanted you to play.
I can remember everything about the Arcadia Library. Arcadia Public Library, one side was kids, one side was adults. And then as I got older, she'd let me get a bunch of kids' books and then one adult book. Because I was reading so far beyond my age that kids' books, I mean, it was, I'd read it in 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And so she'd start letting me read bigger and bigger. And
chapter books.
And
big books.
Felt more grown up. Chapter books, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to have to stop again.
All right.
Meg, what a pleasure.
Yeah.
What a pleasure. We're talking to Dr. Meg Meeker, and she's a pediatrician. She's been in private practice for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Is that
plus,
a,
yes.
Plus now.
I'm going on 30.
And our co-host for a year and a day.
Yes, co-host for a year and a day.
And you're a grandmother.
And I'm a grandma. Oh,
these kids.
I feel like a seventh grader who's just
fallen
in love.
You got to get permission from your kids to see if it's okay if we post photos. I know that my family, we're pretty protective about what we do and don't post.
Exactly.
But, ooh, you got cute kids.
I do.
Cute grandkids.
I do. And I have 2 wonderful son-in-laws as well.
Well,
bring them out to visit us.
I will.
Let's do that.
We've loved talking today. We're not near through with that book. We'll come back to it along with the five of you've written 6 books, right?
This is 7. Number 6.
6.
Number 6.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well.
And it was my favorite.
Really?
It was my favorite, yes. Because as I said, it was, you know, hearing about mothers and what men said about their mothers and, you know, getting to see how boys see me. It made me feel really good about being a mother because there's a lot. You know, my son started doing his laundry in high school, and I felt really guilty about it. But then I thought, no, that's being a good mom. And
it is.
To realize that sons like that kind of stuff. So, Yeah, it really was my favorite.
Ryan, we have run long here, and so you're not going to have an opportunity to close out the broadcast in the usual way. But let me just say to our friends out there, if you enjoy what we're doing, you might want to give us a little help.
Sure.
Summer's coming, and this time of year, and all that has gone on. So a word to the wise, we'd appreciate some help.
We would. And one way you can do that is by purchasing our books from us. Could you get it cheaper on Amazon? Absolutely. And if you need to, we totally understand. But by buying the books from us, you really do give us a leg up, and we appreciate it.
The book is Strong Mothers, Strong Sons, and we'll pick up right here whenever.
Whenever. Okay. It'll be my pleasure. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Mike. And if you'd like to donate to Family Talk or to pick up a copy of Dr. Meeker's new book, Strong Mothers, Strong Sons, you can do so by visiting our website at drjamesdobson.org or by calling us at 877-732-6825. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.